Welcome to Subway Sports Talk.
Dan, clear of the closing doors, please.
All right, here we go with Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I am your host. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in to SST on Apple Podcasts, App, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We appreciate you the same. It's a great episode today, not short of any pain, because if you watched any New York sports, and I'm not talking about hockey. I don't know how the Rangers or Islanders did today, just to get that out of the way. If you watched any New York sports today, the Mets, the Yankees, the Knicks, it was all pain. And who I like
Nets
to...
Nets won.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Wow, that's kind of rude of me to not even think of the Nets. But they've been winning so much lately, we don't even count them.
They're also not a real New York team, though.
I guess so. That's like a... It's a harsh thing to say, but... It's
in
like...
New Jersey Nets.
It feels okay. Anyways, let's bring in the guys. No one else I'd rather feel this pain with than my guys. We got the designated hitters. Plus one. We'll get to him in a minute. Alec Argento, first and foremost. What's up, brother?
What's up?
And Andrew Kalania, how we doing?
Doing all right. Ready to break down the number one thing on everybody, not even just New York. I think the entire country has got the fever. Did anyone see that new Ghostbusters teaser today with the little mini Stay Puft Marshmallow Man?
All right.
Yeah. Paul
Rudd?
And also frightening at the same time.
Was it Paul Rudd?
Paul Rudd. It was fantastic.
I didn't make it to the part that I think you're talking about. I saw it on Instagram, and I saw Paul Rudd. I was like, I like Paul Rudd. And then like 8 seconds went by, I was like, swipe. That was it. That's all I had.
It's great. It's adorable. It's little mini Stay Puft Marshmallows, and they're all basically killing themselves. It's adorable and it's frightening at the same time.
You reeled me
so
back in.
This movie in November.
You reeled me back in with that last part there. Little marshmallow guys killing themselves. Sign me up.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Oh my gosh, I was waiting for an obscure baseball stat that you were coming with, but you kept me on my toes yet again with Ghostbusters. But also joining us right now. First time on the podcast. He's going to be helping out. He'll be on a bunch of episodes moving forward. His name is Michael Bonfield. Mike, what's going on?
What's going on, guys? Thank you for having me on. Looking forward to being a part of the show going forward.
Yeah, man. We got some fresh blood in here. I think Alec and I have been doing this podcast for, I don't even know. Dude.
4 years?
4 years. We've been doing this.
I think so.
3 or 4 years. It's been a minute. Andrew's been doing it for 2 years.
How long has Aaron Judge been in the league? That was the first thing I said was that I'm excited about him coming into camp.
This would be his...
2017.
Wow.
4 years.
Damn, he's not like a new guy anymore. That's kind of weird. We're talking about Aaron Judge, of course, because we're going to be talking Yankees in a minute. But Mike, welcome to Subway Sports Talk. We're happy to have you. And before we do get into the Yankees and the Mets, because we're going to be talking baseball, it's the beginning of baseball season. We're excited. That excitement comes with some pain. Some other pain comes along with the New York Knicks. So let's do some passing words and thoughts here. Another tough loss, down to the wire, could not quite close the door again. And as we've talked about on this very podcast a number of times, closing is an issue. We want the defense to be the closer, but you still got to put the ball in the hoop. And when you face teams like the Celtics, who have had a really bad season by all metrics for them, they're still a little bit better than Knicks. And that top-end talent takes them over the hump. The Knicks quite can't reach. So Alec can't quite reach. That's better. It's better, you know, way to say that. Alec, Knicks, thoughts quickly. Is it just the endings that are frustrating to you, or is there more to the story here?
A couple things. I think, you know, it's we didn't make a deal at the deadline, right? And you live with that because you don't want to give up any assets for the future. But with that comes the fact that other teams got better. Other teams have depth that they didn't have before. And it's going to, you know, you're missing out on something key, which is we don't have a closer. And I love Julius Randle. He's been awesome this year. He's having, I think, the wear and tear on the season is wearing on him a little bit. And he's not a closer. He's just not. He doesn't have that kind of big shot. And we're not leaning on RJ enough. RJ has been unreal lately. I think he's made 15 of his last 21 threes. He's clearly the type of guy that takes things to heart, which is what you want, right? He's the, after that Anthony Edwards call out, after not making the rookie team, he's just constantly getting better in the things that he needs to get better in, and it's very apparent. You know, it sucks because we're missing these close games, but you know, at the same time, you have to like kind of ground yourself and say, oh, well, you know, we also were projected like 20 wins this year. So the fact that we are past our season projections already, you kind of live with this. They're still probably going to make the playoffs in some capacity, whether it's a play-in tournament or not. And these are what you learn, right? This is what you want the young kids to learn, is how to close these games. And it sucks because it reminds me of when we were like actually trying to win to win every season, and we were blowing those 1-point games, and you know, people were hitting these buzzer beaters on us, and it just killed us in the KP and the Melo eras. You know, you got to think that, hey, this team has the lowest payroll in basketball, right? They have a core, and they have picks, and they have money to spend. So, you know, it sucks when you see it in action, but when you take a step back and you can actually digest it a little bit, you know, this season we're going to get somebody. There's no way we're not going to get somebody with the assets that we have available and the money we have available, whether it's Alonzo or trading for a Beal or a Cat or whatever, or D'Lo or whatever the case is. You know, you're going to upgrade from Elfrid Payton, who has been a net negative in every aspect of his game this year. So, I mean, having a legitimate point guard, which it seems we could probably get in some capacity in this draft, in this offseason, it makes it a little bit more palatable. But in the moment, it friggin' sucks to watch. We're 2-8 in games decided by 3 points or less. And it seems like we're just constantly in the past like 3 or 4 weeks in these close games. So, it sucks. It's compounded by the fact that the Yankees lost, and I can't, you know, it's nice to have like an emotional hedge there when the Yankees can win and the Knicks lose or vice versa. So I don't know. It sucks, but I also, like, if I have like an hour or two to digest it, I can feel a little bit better and just say, okay, well, this season we were supposed to be the worst team in basketball.
Right. Yeah. We're striking while the iron's hot. I got a text from you within the hour, you know, before we started recording. Oh, great. The Knicks and Yankees both just blew it within seconds. Like, but we're in the luxurious point of life where the Knicks are playing meaningful basketball still while the Yankees are even playing. You know, when was the last time the Knicks were playing meaningful basketball when baseball season started? So, not to repeat everything you just said.
It's usually my segue to just baseball. The Knicks are usually my segue to the Yankees.
Yeah, they just get you to baseball season.
Yeah.
Mike, let's get a take from you. I'm curious what your thoughts on RJ Barrett, the closer, is, because Alec just mentioned, you know, he wants to see RJ close more. Do you think something that would be good for RJ is to just, you know, trial by fire, get in there, get your shots up, take your lumps, miss a lot of close games and see what happens, see if he grows out of it? Do you want to see RJ get those opportunities?
Yeah, so I agree with Alec. I definitely do not think the Knicks have that go-to guy to take the last shot at the end of the game right now. I do believe that Julius Randle felt like he was that guy last season, and that almost held him back as a player. And since he's gotten away from that, his individual performance and the team's performance have both improved. So I do think that it's good to have that guy to go to, and RJ might be that guy. The only problem is he's still a little young. He's got some work to do, but like you said, maybe putting up those shots will help him, but you also don't want him to fall in that category that Julius Randle fell into, where he has to be the guy, and then now he's hindering his development because he feels like he's that guy, and he's being put a little too much pressure on himself being in that situation when he still is a young player and still does need to develop his game. I'm 6-for-6 from beyond the arc tonight, which is very impressive shooting. Definitely something that he's been working on and improving his game, and I would like to see that to continue to improve, especially if he is going to take those late shots, because sometimes those late shots have to be a three ball.
Right.
So I definitely like what I've seen. I definitely think he has the potential to be that guy going forward, but I think it's going to take guys around him giving him that confidence, guys like Julius Randle. So instead of Julius maybe being that guy, maybe half the time he could take the shot and the other half the time he could, you know, kind of give RJ that confidence of, listen, I've been in this spot before. I feel like I'm kind of that guy now, but be this guy with me so we can be the guys and take some of the pressure off each other and help the team win.
That's a really good take, because you think about around the league, all the various, you know, versions of what we're talking about, what RJ could be. You think about an Andrew Wiggins type, who the trial by fire thing in Minnesota did not work, right? It didn't help him.
Exactly.
And people were calling him a bust until he went to Golden State with a superstar next to him, a true superstar, because Kat's just like a stat star at this point. And now it's like, oh yeah, Andrew Wiggins, totally useful guy on a basketball team. He's probably not an all-star at this point in time, but he's good and he can do some things. But when he was getting thrown in the fire in Minnesota, He looked like crap. And Donovan Mitchell, on the flip side, we threw him in the fire first season. He was a rookie going into the playoffs for a Jazz team that was competitive, and it led him to a good place, right? So,
and now they're first place in the Western Conference, best record in basketball. I mean, and you know, Utah's looking pretty good, and it paid off. But like you said, yeah, with Wiggins, like Minnesota, not only did that hurt Wiggins' development, but Minnesota hasn't been a playoff team in years now. I mean, Wiggins was a top pick in the draft out of Kansas, like, you know, for what he was supposed to be. And now sometimes all it takes is a switch of scenery or adding a real superstar. I mean, I think Randall's elevated play has already helped RJ. And, you know, hopefully they're just getting started, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Jazz have that infrastructure. They had good players. They had a good coach. The Knicks are like kind of in between right now. They don't have all the good players, but they have the system. They have the culture. So we're going in a direction. It seems like the right direction for the Knicks, for RJ. And we will talk about that more as we get closer to playoffs. Because now when you look at the standings in basketball, it's like, okay, this is not, you know, all-star break standings where there's so much time for things to change. There's still 20-something games left. So there's time for it to move. It could be good or bad for the Knicks. But the standings is a serious place to focus on now and see where the Knicks are going to end up. But that's enough for the Knicks for now because we're talking about them a lot. We have basketball episode coming back next week. This is a baseball episode. And we have to talk about Yankees as Frank and I just hit the Mets on a big episode last week. Andrew, I'm going to start off with you. The Yankees, it's a mixed bag. It's kind of negative right now. Not, you know, negative right now in the sense of the first week of the season isn't going how you would hope it goes, but it's not a long-term panic. Is there one thing, though, in particular where you're saying, all right, this hasn't been good, and I was nervous about this before the season. Now I'm nervous about it now, and I don't know how it gets better. Is there one thing, though, with the Yankees team that you are actually close to panicking about?
I mean, it's the first week of baseball. You know, it's you're still at the point where one hit can still, you know, swing your batting average like 40 points up or down. So stats look kind of they're going to look wonky until, you know, May, June-ish. And then, you know, guys will regress to, you know, the back of their baseball card. But if there's one thing, it's the health and the health of Aaron Judge. Now, again, he's played five games. One at DH and one, and he had a day off. So he's played four games and already he's a soft tissue issue for the Yankees. And he's going to be evaluated and let's see what happens. I'm fully expecting him to hit the IL for 10 days, you know, even after resting for a day or two, but I think we've hit the point as Yankees fans to say, I don't think you're ever going to get the Aaron Judge of 2017 where he's going to play more than 140 games. I think you know, 110 games of Aaron Judge is probably a lot better than 150 of a lot of other outfielders, but it's just still so disheartening to see this consistently happen to him and within the first four games of the season. So that's something I've really been disheartened about. I mean, the starting rotation has been, you know, pretty good. They didn't pitch as many innings in the Blue Jays series, but, you know, Cole and Montgomery pitched really well against the Orioles. And Tyon, even tonight, he pitched 4 2/3 and he struck out 7. I mean, he only allowed those 2 solo home runs, and those were the only 2 bad pitches he's thrown all night. So the starting rotation has been surprising well. The bullpen's been great. King pitching those clutch 6 innings on Sunday to save the pen when German couldn't get through 3 innings. So, very happy with the pitching staff. Sanchez and Frazier look great, and Stans look pretty good with that grand slam. So it's just the soft tissue injury, and it's just Aaron Judge just constantly just disappointing me. You know, Stan goes 2 for 4 tonight, he gets booed, and then I'm sure when Aaron Judge sets up the plate tomorrow, everyone's going to cheer, and whenever he decides to step back on the field, and he's going to get cheered. Like, I'm getting very very sick of the Stanton doing all run and Judge getting all this praise. And honestly, like, what has he done to earn that praise aside from 2017? He's done just as much recently for the Yankees as Stanton does.
He so got his teeth fixed, dude.
I'm very disheartened by the whole thing.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And it's sad because we talked about it before the season. I think I made a apology to Yankee fans before the season started for all the injuries that were on its way, right? And look at where we are. We're 1 week into the season talking about soft tissue injury for Aaron Judge. Right, wait, what's his injury again? Is that right? I heard you say that.
It's oblique.
Oblique. Yeah, there you go. So, Alec, are you feeling some similar sentiments here? What's your what's a vibe? Give me a vibe check. That's what I wanted to ask you. What's a vibe check for the Yankees right now?
Tough, because
that sigh was everything.
it's tough because it's tough to say because I agree with everything Drew just said. Aaron Boone just said that it's too early to say if he's playing on Friday, which you know that means that there's an IL stint imminent, which sucks. There are definitely some worrisome things in here, and it's good to see some of the pitching do well. I don't think anybody was worried about the pitching in terms of their talent. I think what everyone's worried about with the pitching is if they're going to stay on the field, which remains to be seen. If you have everyone, going out there, they're one of the best rotations in baseball, at least on paper. So I'm not really too worried about that, but I was talking to Drew about this before during the game. The Yankees lineup is, the jury's out on them, right? You throw flamethrowers, right-handed flamethrowers at them, they're going to have a hard time putting the ball in play. And that's just evidenced by what's going on right now. And I know we were at a point maybe a year or two ago where it's we don't need lefties. We have just such good hitters that it doesn't matter. But our lineup is not broken up at all. And everyone, you just keep throwing righties out of the bullpen at them. They're just not going to get hits. And it's tough. Maybe somebody will run into a fastball or whatever the case is, and it goes out of the field. But it's hard to just constantly being reliant upon home runs, because we are leaving tons of guys on base. I don't know what the number was today, but it felt like it was at least 11 people on base.
Tonight they went close. 3 for 14 with runners in scoring position.
12 left on base.
It was 11 guys on base.
It was 12, but that was a great guesstimation right there.
Yeah.
Well, 3 for 14, that's 11.
To speak more of the lineup construction that Alec brought up, and it's kind of the reason why I'm they went and took the flyer on Odor, lefty guy with pop that can just break up the lineup a little bit, I know that that you're not going to replace any of the starters because all the starters are very good, but again, part of the part of the offseason is you're supposed to strengthen the bench a little bit to be able to send up a pinch hitter. When they're throwing out those right-handed flamethrowers that are going to mow down a right-handed lineup, and I don't have a high expectations for Odor, but he's intriguing, and the Yankees do seem to pick up these scrap heaps from other teams and be able to get out of them the most. They did with Didi and Talkman and Voit and Hicks and Gio Urshela. They have a really good track record, but again,
only with Odor's, position players.
Mm. Yeah, only with position players. And statistically speaking, Odor had by OPS base plus slugging the worst 30 home run seasons in the history of baseball. Number one, Rogel Odor. Number two, Rogel Odor. The two worst statistical 30 home run seasons in baseball history by the same guy.
Oh, that's impressive, actually.
But he cost us literally $0.
Nothing. So it's a flyer. So it's, but again, you would like to think that during the offseason, that's when you would make these kind of moves to try to strengthen the bench and not, I'm glad they're pouncing on somebody. But again, I have very low expectations.
How much does not having Voit have hurt the makeup of this lineup, the identity of this lineup?
I was thinking about that today because Voit is when he's healthy, and he's been roughly healthy, he was pretty much your best player last year.
No,
when he's healthy, he's the best. He's the most consistent player on the team outside of DJ. Mm-hmm. And that hurts. You look at last April and the April before that, if I'm not mistaken, Luke Voit was just running things for the Yankees when everybody else is getting out of spring. So that hurts a lot. I just want to say one thing before I forget. There's two things that are bothering me, I think are outliers. Again, things that I worry about. Gleyber Torres cannot play shortstop. And the problem is that you have to live with that. There's nothing you can do about that. He has to play shortstop, and you need his bat in the lineup, and you're not going to put anyone else at shortstop because you're not going to take DJ off second.
Yeah, but I feel like a competent first baseman catches two of those throwing errors tonight. Like those were like just missing like Jay Bruce's glove. Like
this isn't his first time that he's had some errors already this season.
No, of course that. No, I get that, but like it kind of makes you appreciate what Mark Teixeira did, like when Jeter used to like short throw those short throws from shortstop all the time, and Teixeira would just pick the shit out of it every single time. You may appreciate that. Now you're watching Jay Bruce like just whiffing on like I'm pretty sure catchable balls. Like, but I think
Luke Voigt isn't that great of a defensive first baseman.
One of the most,
but he can at least pick the ball.
One of the most underrated things. I don't even know, overlooked things. You can use a bunch of different verbs here, or adjectives here. It's when you say, oh, there's an outfielder or a catcher or an old third base. Well, third base is probably a little different because they have a different skill set, but an outfielder who's slow, a catcher who lost his legs, just put him at first base. Like, he'll be fine. He can catch, right? Like, nah, like, you need competence at first base. And like you just said, Drew, like, it shows in different times like that. Like, yeah, Torres is getting the error in the box score.
I think it's easy to do that transition and be okay at first base. It's next to impossible for them to be like actually a net positive on defense when they go to first.
Right. But like you said, though, even things that are seemingly average plays for a lot of first basemen, for first basemen by trade, are not average plays for someone who just moved to the position within the past couple of years. And Jay Bruce, I mean, yeah, a couple more 0-for-5s, and we're not going to feel too good about him in the lineup for much longer. I do want to talk about the lineup, though, because a big contention point that I've seen, I'm sure you guys have seen, I'm sure you've talked about it, we've kind of danced around it at this point. Alec mentioned the lefties or lack thereof in the lineup. Aaron Hicks is a contention point.
I was going
to
bring that up.
Yeah. So, Mike, you haven't been in here in a second. Let me hop to you. What are your thoughts about the setup here? You know, because everyone's saying, oh, why is Hicks third in the lineup? Like, he's not the hitter who belongs there, but he's a lefty, or he's a switch hitter, actually. But, you know, you need him there. Where do you land on that debate? Do you have to switch up the lefties and righties, or would you just go 1-2-3-4 righties if it's what it is?
I have recently been talking to people about the sometimes overthinking that can be done in the game of baseball, where there is so much thought that goes into the lefty righty matchup with pitching. And don't get me wrong, it's a real thing. It's definitely a real thing. And if it wasn't, there wouldn't be so much attention paid to it, and there wouldn't be so much strategy behind it. But I do think sometimes teams can overthink it, and they wind up putting a player in who strategically, because of which side of the plate he hits on, may be placed in that position over someone who is just naturally a better hitter or a better baseball player, for example. And I mean, I'm unfortunately, you know, not a Yankee fan, I'm a Met fan, but I saw this recently with the Mets in their opening game when they started Kevin Pillar over Dom Smith, which came to a surprise to a lot of fans because Dom Smith, clearly the better bat, but Pillar, for the purpose of who was pitching against them that day, was in that lineup, and it wound up hurting them because until the ninth inning, he didn't get a hit all game, especially when he was in a big spot in that game that could have blown the game open. But, you know, as far as the Yankees go with Hicks, I mean, it really depends. It really depends. And I think that the Yankees do have a lot. Again, it comes down to staying healthy as well, because as you guys were mentioning earlier, Aaron Judge already, you know, it seems like he can never stay on the field. And that's a huge bat to have in the lineup. Stanton's starting to come around now and give his money's worth. And, you know, it really depends on.
So you're kind of saying if they're healthy, Hicks probably wouldn't be there anyway.
If healthy Hicks or healthy Yankees lineup.
True. You know, yeah, I guess. Mean? Yeah, you're right.
Right. That's the thing. And that's the debate. And it's something that's been a part of baseball, something that's going to continue to be a part of. There's only more strategy being added to this game as it goes forward, as we see with defensive shifts and, like you said, offensive lineup changes. I mean, they have the new rule now where a new pitcher coming into the game has to face at least three batters, because before that it was, all right, let's bring in the righty and then he'll face one batter, and then, all right, we'll bring in the lefty to face the next batter. And it's just, it's so much strategy and sometimes too much overthinking.
Can we talk about rules for a second? Can we bring up the fact that the extra inning man on second thing is still a thing this year?
Yeah.
I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, I tweeted and I put it in the group chat that I was like, I completely forgot that it was a thing until it happened on like on opening day. I was like, shit, they're still doing this. Like, God, and we don't have a DH in the National League. Come on now. Come on out, Rob Manfred. But as far as like lineup construction goes, like, again, I don't think this will be a hot button conversation. You know, Hicks really struggled in the first series, and he didn't really get off to a good start in the first six games. I mean, again, it's six games. So, you know, people like to make a bigger deal out of the early stats, whether it's good or bad, either way. And like, I get it. And I get trying to break up, you know, you don't want two similar type hitters in Judge and Stanton batting back to back. But again, at like a certain point, they did this shit with Didi Gregorius and they batted Brett Gardner third the other day, like just to break up. For the love of God, just let these guys just eat. Just let them eat. You know,
it's just weird to me too,
I'm a bigger Aaron Hicks fan than I think anybody else on this pod. And I think he gets on base and I think he plays a great center field, and you know, he has a little bit of pop, but he's not a number three hitter. Like if it was up to me, I'd probably lead him off and put DJ LeMahieu. If you want to split up, if you want to put a different look, put DJ LeMahieu third. He's probably the best hitter in the Yankees lineup. You put him third, put Hicks at the top of the lineup, and he gets on base just as much as LeMahieu. So like, it's just for the simple, you know, for the fact that, you know, he bats left-handed and, you know, you're trying to avoid the situation that the Yankees been finding themselves in with they're bringing in right-handed relievers in at the end of games and they're just mowing them down. So they're trying to prevent that. But at the, you know, the lineup's right-handed. You can't, one guy is not making that big of a difference. If you had it like how it used to be, used to have like three switch hitters in the lineup with Bernie Posada. I'm forgetting another switch hitter. There used to be three in the lineup back in the Yankees. Yeah, Teixeira in their heyday, they used to be, you know. So it's no-win situation.
Yeah, it's ongoing too. Like this is a big, like you said, hot button topic right now. If Hicks turns around and hits two home runs in the next series, everyone's gonna feel a lot better about it. But like you said, is he a three-hole guy? Like, is he a three-hole guy? Yeah. I was talking about it with Frank on the podcast. We talked about the Mets with Dom Smith. In that situation, it's always funny to me when a player who doesn't play every day, when they're in the lineup, like bat fifth, or they bat third, or they bat, you know, leadoff on their spot start. It's like if they're going to be a spot guy or they're not going to start every day, a platoon guy, you would naturally assume they're going to bat at the end of the lineup because they're not good enough to be in the lineup. So if you're going to bat a guy in the top four or five guys in the lineup, and then he's not going to play the next day? Like, it's kind of crazy. And also, I looked at Dom Smith's numbers, not that we're talking about him. His lefty splits last year, he was .280 average against lefties last year. Yeah, he was .320 against righties, but he was still kind of good against lefties. And I don't know. It's a weird concept. I get it. And I guess the Yankees are hamstrung by it. But they're also facing right-handed pitchers in these situations where there's no lefties. These guys face right-handed pitchers, what, 70% of at-bats?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more than that? Why is it a big deal? Like if Giancarlo Stanton or Aaron Judge struggle that much against righties, like they wouldn't be who they are. They wouldn't be who they are. They should be able to hold their own, move it along, and keep the flow. But I think when Hicks turns it around, hits his first home run for the season, we're all going to start to feel a little bit better about it. But then again, to playoffs, comes to the crunch time, do you still want to see him in the three hole?
No, not only that, they also put Brett Gardner in the three hole last game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's wild.
they used to do it with Didi all the time. I love Didi.
Didi makes more sense than Brett Gardner.
Yeah, but you know, I like Didi too, but Didi's not a number three hitter. Again, it's supposed to be your number two and three guys are supposed to be your best hitters. And Aaron Hicks is a good hitter, but he's not the Yankees' best. He doesn't belong in the spot. It's just plain and simple.
He has an on base percentage over .350 three times, or yeah, three of the last four seasons. And 2019, he only played just under 60 games. He only OBP'd .325, but last year .380. Yeah, 2 years or 3 years ago, .366. The year before that, .372. So he's on base. I don't hate the idea of putting him two or one.
I like the idea that Drew threw out there of switching Hicks and LeMahieu, because what Hicks does better than most people on the team is he draws walks. He draws a lot of walks. So his on-base percentage is like 350, but his batting average is 260. That means he's drawn a ton of walks. That's the guy you want batting first, right? Making the pitcher work, setting the tone. And you want DJ, like I understand he gets on base, but you want him to slap that single to drive people home who are on base already. I think that makes too much sense for it to not happen. I'm actually surprised I never thought of that myself. But that's a good call out, Drew.
Give me the thumbs up, but visual cue on an audio podcast.
Good radio.
That's what it's all about. Have we gone fully through the rotation, right, for the Yankees?
Yeah, the Taillon made his first start today.
Yeah, so is there one starter that jumped out to you? Obviously, we know what Cole does. You know, Cole's Cole. We don't have to talk about him. But is there another starter that you were pleasantly surprised with?
Taillon, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, Kluber is like, I think he's going to get into trouble this year. I don't think he has it anymore. I don't think he's really a number two anymore. But Taillon could totally be that number two for us if he could stay on the field. And I don't know, he's got strikeout stuff. Kluber doesn't really have that. He's got like a sweeping curveball and whatnot. I like Taillon a lot. Granted, you know, he gave up those two solo runs, and Drew had texted me and said solo runs won't kill you, and they actually did. But for someone who hasn't pitched in like 2.5 years, he looked pretty amazing out there. So, and granted, it's the Orioles, but still.
Orioles who just beat you.
they're going to take it really slow with Kluber and Taillon. They're going to build them up. You know, again, I wasn't expecting Kluber or Taillon to go past 5 innings in their first couple starts. If they're still doing that in June and July, then I'll be more concerned about them. But I think they're both, you know, as expected, the first time out. And as far as pleasant surprises, Jordan Montgomery was so clutch. 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, looked pretty unhittable. And like I said, this was my prediction before the season started, that I think Montgomery's going to be pitching the second most innings out of that rotation, you know, after Cole. So I think he's picking up where he left off in the playoffs. And, you know, he's looked like he's coming out firing right out the gate.
I saw a few Loaisiga innings. He looked sharp too.
Oh, Johnny Lasagna.
Looks real good. Favorites.
He looked real sharp. Is there a guy? Go ahead.
No, we said in the beginning of the season with Johnny Lasagna, like can they find a role for him? If they can find a role for him, then he will excel in that role, right? But it was just about identifying it. So if he's just going to be a 1-2 inning pitcher, he's going to do well in that role. He's got the stuff to do it. He's just not a starter. And it's just, you know, it's always the growing pain of having a pitching prospect come up and figuring out if they can actually be a starter, because they can be really good starting pitcher in the minors, and they come up and they just don't have it because they need that extra pitch or whatever the case is. He is, if he can run with that role and he accepts it and let it be that, he could be a really good piece of this bullpen.
Yeah, no, and you know, they're stop doing the swingman thing with him. Like that's Cessa's role, that's Lookie's role, that's Nick Nelson's role. You know, Johnny Lasagna is going to be, you know, relied on in those the 6th-7th innings to get those big high leverage outs. And you know, I he was my guy last year, and you know, very excited to see him actually thrive in this role. You know, he's got really nasty stuff, so. I'm excited to keep watching him mature.
I like how your brain naturally wants to call him Lasagna only.
Real G's move in silence like Lasagna. Or Kalanya.
Right. Now, oh.
I'll tell you what, though.
Oh, Kalanya.
Darren O'Day is going to be a wild ride all year.
Well, that actually leads me to my next question. So, Alec, you can answer it first. Who do you know already is your guy, whether it's a bullpen guy or a guy backup who comes in for a pinch hit or ends up in a game after a defensive switch, who's the guy who you know you like already hate? Not that you hate, but nervous. Is it Luke?
I texted it to Drew yesterday. Sometimes it's fun for me to identify that guy like right away, even if they really like. You got to give them, in reality, you have to give them time to prove themselves. But like, it's just fun for me to have someone on the team to hate right away. It's Lukey. Like, I know it's a good story. I know he hasn't pitched in 30 years, but like, there's probably a reason for it. And I know he's not going to be on the team as soon as Justin Wilson gets back and all that jazz. But like, I love to have a player on the team to hate. And like, it's getting harder and harder for me to hate Clint Frazier and Giancarlo Stanton, so I have to just cut bait and move on. But there'll always be somebody, and right now it's Lutke.
I really hate Jay Bruce and his inability to play catch base
or hit.
Did it do or anything?
Hit. Yeah, I know it's like what you Met fans to that you guys went through. Except you know we're not paying him whatever the $17 million that the Mets are paying him to do basically what he's doing now. So it's I understand. No, I understand.
Mike, on the flip side, as a Mets fan, who is the Yankee who you can't help but love?
Wow, what a question. That's tough because I really don't like the Yankees, but I do love the game of baseball, and I do appreciate some good players for sure. I actually do really like Aaron Hicks. I think the Yankees got I like his defense.
Alex, he's not Alex, great bat, Alex stuck I mean? His tongue out bat. for listeners.
but I do think that defensively he could be a game-changing player, and I think that what they were able to turn him into from what they got him for, I think is because the Yankees are loaded with DJ LeMahieu, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton. So it would be a little too easy, Garrett Cole, like, you know, a little too easy for me to pick one of these guys because, yeah, of course, how could you not love watching these guys as a fan of baseball? But, you know, as someone who I think is maybe a wild card that could be a difference maker, I would go Aaron Hicks, of course, more on the defensive side of the game.
That's usually my default answer too, because I like Hicks a lot. Like, he just moves so smoothly around center field. He's confident out there. He's a switch hitter, which is always kind of fun. And when he connects, like, man, he's got a pretty home run ball when he's on, and he can change the game with his bat as well. So I'm with you there.
His last full healthy season, he hit 27 home runs. You know, So and an on base percentage of almost .370. So like that's. And getting elite center field out of him, like, you know, if he does that, I think you can, you know, you'd be very happy with him, what he does. It still doesn't make him a number three hitter, but you know, he's a very good, he's still a top 10 center fielder in baseball, definitely in top five in the American League. So, you know,
Alec seems to have contention there. You have contention with that statement, Alec?
By way of what?
Is Aaron Hicks a top 10 center fielder?
What are we saying? Is he like defensively or overall?
Overall.
I'd have to look at a list. I don't know off the top of my head. I feel like you were really depending on me to have some kind of hot.
I thought I saw some like eyebrow, like.
Yeah, I was fixing my glasses.
All right. You can't win them all. I do want to add this. Gary Sanchez is a guy who I just want to see hit monster dunks all the time. There's a few home runs that are prettier to see than Gary Sanchez connecting. I think honestly, Gary Sanchez reminds me of like a Nelson Cruz in that sense. And I just mentioned Nelson Cruz on the last podcast, so I'm going back to the well. When he hits a moonshot, it is just so sweet and fluid, and the ball flies incredibly high in the air, and you just know instantly, Gary knows instantly, Nelson Cruz knows instantly, and it's like, oh my God, that's when you pick up your phone and you text your buddies like, oh my, did you just see that? Did you see that home run right there? That was a freaking moonshot. So I want to see Gary Sanchez go off. He's caused Yankee fans a good bit of pain in the past couple years. Obviously, batting under 200 more than once is never good. But if he can figure it out, you know, he can be a guy who shores up the lineup that no one expected to be an issue. It feels a little tighter now than we would have expected. Any last thoughts on the Yankees before we move over to the Mets and hop around the league?
I knew Gary was gonna get off to a hot start. I mean, he looked pretty locked in spring training, and then, you know, he had two home runs in the first two games, and now he's had multi-hit games the last two games. Like he's throwing out runners that are stealing. Like, he's doing exactly what he needs to do, and I think he looks confident at the plate, even when, you know, he's legging out singles, and he has a lot to prove. So I'm very encouraged by his strong start.
One thing I want to note is that I'm worried about defense all around, not just Gleyber Torres. Obviously, we mentioned Jay Bruce too, but I mean, something that they mentioned about Judge was that he's not going to be legging it out on and diving him, and throwing his body around because it's the beginning of the season. And it's very apparent. Like, that's okay. but like he looks like a step short out there because he's trying to protect his body, and it clearly hasn't mattered anyway. Clint Frazier misplayed a lazy fly ball the other day, just dropped down. They said that Gio Urshela, after his surgery, his throws have gone down 10 miles an hour, which that's a big concern because
that's alarming. Like,
if he's not hitting, at least you get elite defense. But if he can't make those long throws as sharp as he used to, that's going to worry me. And Aaron Hicks, like I don't have the numbers or anything like this. This is just the eye test. But with Aaron Hicks, ever since his surgery, I don't think he has anywhere near the arm that he used to. He moves well out there in the outfield. Like, there's no denying that he's, you know, arguably a top three defensive center fielder in the league. But his arm does not seem like what it used to be. So all around, outside of DJ, which second base isn't the hardest position to play, and even Gary's defense, you know, is always suspect there. So as a game becomes more micro and micro, as we talked about before, and like these little moves happen, one error can cost you the game. It did cost us the game tonight, right? And mm-hmm. It's getting tighter and tighter out there, and we just don't have good defense. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We don't have a good defensive unit out there.
I mean, my last point about the Yankees, I think I would go back to Gary Sanchez. I think this is could be considered a make or break year for Sanchez. I think that he has a lot to prove. Like we mentioned, he's caused Yankee fans a lot of pain in recent years. And it's so tough because you get so excited when you see him hit a home run, but how often does he do that? You know what I mean? And that's the thing is, or baseball isn't just about hitting home runs. You know, at one point, I feel like the game was like that. And now you kind of have to play all around. You have to play well because, like you just mentioned, Alec, like all it takes is you hit a slump or you're in a bad streak, which Sanchez seems to have been in now for a few seasons. You know, it's the clock is ticking and when does it run out? And I think this year is huge for Gary Sanchez. And I think he knows it, which is why he seems so locked in and why he's off to such a hot start. But we'll see if he can keep it up.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the quick Aaron Boone vibe check? What's the Boone check?
Overmanaging as usual.
Yeah, yeah.
that was pain from Andrew.
Yeah, and I think one of the unfortunate parts about COVID outside of, you know, millions of people dying in the world is that the lack of reporters going into the clubhouse and like asking actual questions. It's basically whoever the Yankees decide to set up into like the Zoom room, like they're not sending Aaron Judge in there. He's not going to sit there and answer questions about why the hell he's not playing. So like his other teammates and Boone have to be the people that are like stepping in front of him and like answering those questions, which is just annoying as shit. Like, especially like this point, I'm not sure if like Judge like understands the difference between playing through an injury or playing like actually hurt. You know, like everyone's gonna not feel great 100% of the time, or if like you actually like you really hurt and you can't, you know, play through the injury. I'm not sure if he does that. I'm not sure if that adequately answers the question about Aaron Boone, but it's just something that
does though.
It's always him. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the manager's job is to, you know, take fire for the players, but like, as you know,
it doesn't go
that,
well though.
Something that grinds my gears.
No, it's fair on the Aaron Boone vibe check front because it doesn't particularly go well. Like, Yankee fans shouldn't feel instantly when Aaron Boone opens his mouth about an injury that it's going to be wrong. And that's how it is. Like, that's how you guys feel. I know because you text me or you text our little group chat every time the slightest injury news breaks. You're like, all right, well, today it's a meaningless injury. He'll be back day to day. And tomorrow he's on the IL. And that's frustrating. And you can argue, and I'm the type of person sometimes to sit here and say, oh, does it really matter if the fans know, as long as it's tight in the clubhouse and everybody's on the same page? Like, yeah, that's an easy answer to say. But from a fan perspective, which we're fans and we enjoy the game and Yankee fans are rooting for the team, to just be in the dark all the time, it sucks. Like, there's no other way to skin the cat. Like, it sucks when you don't know if you can trust what your manager is saying and you're expecting one lineup today and you're getting a different lineup tomorrow because the injury was undersold and it's way worse than we thought and your favorite player is on the IL. Like, that sucks. And it falls on Aaron Boone. It's part of his responsibility. But I think it's a very fair complaint for a fan. And realistically, it may not mean much for how the team performs, but it does mean something for the vibe standpoint. And I'm sure the players feel similarly. Like, they're out there, they want to play, I'm sure. And they're trying to be like, oh, it's not so bad. And all of a sudden, they're out for a couple weeks. And that's just a crappy way to go about it. But that's good on the Yankees for now. We'll obviously be back throughout the season every week. We're talking more Yankees. We're talking more Mets. We're going to talk Mets right now. Quick regroup, Subway Sports Talk. We got myself, Pete Kennedy, Alec Argento. Well, what is that? Why do I not be able to say your name in the middle of a sentence anymore, Alec? I keep saying Argento. It's very strange.
I did change it legally a couple weeks ago, but then I changed it back.
I've known you for a long time. I shouldn't be saying your name wrong. Alec Argento, Andrew Kalania, and Mike Bonfield. Let's talk some Mets now. They've only played one series, so it's a lot harder to really discuss. And like I said, Frank and I just did a longer episode on the Mets this week already, so we won't spend too much time. What's the early vibe check for you, Mike? You're the Mets fan now on this podcast with me. So, you know, what are you feeling? Obviously, McNeil's hitless to this point. Lindor has one hit. You know, Pete's looking pretty good. Some of the other guys are looking okay. Conforto's a little bit up and down, but he has a couple hits in a couple games, so you can't complain too much. What's the vibe check about this team right now?
Yeah, so even though we've only played one series, we actually have a lot of things that we can discuss. Real quick, some of the things you mentioned. McNeil, I've been watching the games. I feel like he kind of can't catch a break right now. He's been hitting the ball hard. And he is someone that I am just so confident in when he gets up to the plate that he is able to get a hit because he's just that guy. He's never swinging for the fences. He's always looking to make contact. He can hit the ball anywhere on the field. So I'm very confident in him. And I think if he just keeps doing his thing, plays his game, plays to his strengths, then the hits are going to come because he's been ripping the ball and guys have just been making plays, which is just part of the game. Other things that I've picked up on, like you said, Pete, I think Pete's changed his game a little bit hitting wise, his approach to the plate. I think last year he was coming off of that first season of being the home run derby champion and breaking the record. And then I think last year he was swinging at pitches out of the strike zone, which was costing him a lot. I think his discipline at the plate has gotten a lot better, and we've seen that in the spring and now carry over into the regular season. And he's been hitting for contact, hitting opposite field, which is what we love to see because you can't get up there and just swing for the fences every time. Baseball isn't – you're not going to always win games like that. So I think that's been good, like what I've seen from Pete so far. J.D. Davis got hit by a pitch on the hand. Regular player in the lineup on the field. They have done two rounds of x-rays, I believe, which have both come back negative, but they're still determining whether or not he'll be placed on the 10-day injured list, which I feel like has been such a common theme around baseball in this first weekend. But we'll see what happens with him. Hopefully he's all right and we can get him back out there soon. But the main takeaway I would take is a negative one, and it's a recurring issue that we've seen these past few seasons and has been, in my opinion, the reason why we are not a playoff team when we should be. We have the roster. We have the pitching staff. Yeah, we've been set back by some injuries, but the bullpen, I mean, we go out this offseason, we get Trevor May, who's had a great few seasons with the Twins. He comes over, and his first appearance as a Met gives up a walk and two hits, which is like, all right, it happens. You know what I mean? First game of the season, you're out there. So let's pull him. Let's bring in Aaron Loop, who he plunks Harper. Bases loaded, plunks Harper, and walks in a run. I mean, if you give up a grand slam to Harper, kudos to Harper. He's a great hitter, you know. You probably shouldn't have left the fastball over the plate if that's the case. But you don't even give your team a chance. If you go out on the mound, you got your whole defense behind you and you hit the batter. We could bring anybody. I could go in there and hit the batter. But this guy's getting paid – Loop's getting paid millions of dollars. And, like, I get it. You know what I mean? But you're a professional baseball pitcher. You go out there and you throw three pitches and you hit the batter to score a run for the other team in a 2-0 game. Playoff teams don't lose games that way. Playoff team, you will not make the playoffs if your bullpen is blowing games all season long. And I think that I was really, as I was watching that happen, I was ready to tweet at Steve Cohen and just say, pay attention, because this is what you've been trying to turn this team into a winning franchise. We have been a losing franchise mainly because of our bullpen. That has been such a big issue. And now here we are, and it's like the same thing all over again. So it's just like, you know, I really, really hope that this is not a theme throughout the 2021 season, because in a tough division like the NL East, you can't afford to blow games like that throughout the year.
Yeah, you don't want to overreact. It's not just
the bullpen for the Mets. You know, as a Mets fan, are you guys even excited to watch Jacob DeGrom pitch anymore?
Nah, like, it's just pain.
It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. The guy is so good.
I tweeted the stat out the other day from via Mike X. He says, so the Mets since 2018, the Mets are 36-41 in Jacob DeGrom starts. And in those starts, he has a 2.07 ERA. So it's not even just the bullpen. It's like the offense, and nobody shows up when Jacob DeGrom pitches. Like he should have 20-25 more wins than what he currently has at the moment. You know, and that's the difference between the Mets making the playoffs the last couple of years is like the Mets just continually just don't score runs for DeGrom, or the bullpen blows it for DeGrom. Like it's at this point I wouldn't be excited to watch him pitch, because you know something bad is inevitably going to happen after he leaves the game.
100%. And this is why it hurts so bad, because it's not even just about Jacob DeGrom. This goes back to like Johan Santana. Like, Johan Santana, if you think about his time with the Mets, it's a mixed bag of memories, because a lot of those games that we should have won, we didn't. Like, his numbers were awesome, and he didn't get a lot of wins because the team couldn't do it. They didn't pull around him or whatever. They didn't do what it took to win when he was on the mound, despite his great performances a lot of the times. So it's not just about DeGrom. It's not just about the first week of the season. This is a reoccurring theme, like Mike said. And that's why it doesn't feel like an overreaction in week one of the season, because this is not a small sample size. This is a history of a team that can't close the door. And when that's the case, you're going to be guilty until proven innocent. It's not the opposite way. Like I say this all the time in sports, it's not like the American judicial system. You're not innocent until proven guilty. You are a choke artist until proven clutch. And right now the Mets are choke artists until proven to be a playoff franchise. Like Mike said, it hits home even in a three-game series to start the season of 162.
I feel like we're at the point where it's almost expected. Like when they pulled DeGrom out of that game, aside from the fact that it's DeGrom, because like we said, whenever they pulled DeGrom, it's almost like, you know, they're going to blow it, because they never have more than a two-run lead if he's pitching, because they don't score. He doesn't give up runs and they don't score. That they must talk about it in the clubhouse before the game starts. They're just like, all right, Jake, go out there, do your thing. Don't give up a run over 10 games and we won't score one for you. And that's literally what happens. And we're at a point where it's expected, because when that happened, when May came in the game, walked two hits, Loop came in, hit the batter. We were winning 2-1. And I looked at my dad, because we were both watching the game together. And I said, they are going to lose this game in this inning. They're going to lose the game. And that's exactly what happened. And we both agreed that is it surprising? No, it's not. But is it unbelievable? Yeah, the fact that this is still happening. And like you said, it goes back. It goes back to Santana. It goes back maybe even further than that if you look at the statistics. But this is just, it's something that Steve Cohen is trying to come in and is promising this change. And like you said, it's not an overreaction, because it's the exact opposite. It's the same that we have seen. And we're trying to get away from that.
Some stink just don't come out.
So first of all, very happy to hear the Mets woes, like from Mets fans, because it just makes me feel a little bit better about.
I'm glad. The Knicks, I'm glad it does. Today.
But doesn't it just feel like the Mets are always like less, like the sum of the Mets is less than the value of the parts,
right?
Like the offense is great on paper until DeGrom pitches, you know, or you know the starting rotation is great until the bullpen comes in, or the bullpen's great until the I mean, it's just there's no consistency around. There's no situational awareness for the Mets at all to get with. Like, you can't rely on one thing to win you the game. It has to be two factors. It has to be offense and pitching, right? You have to score a run on top of it. So it's just like, I don't know. Obviously, the bullpen is the easy target here. But, I mean, are you really confident in the pitching staff right now? I mean, you have DeGrom, who you can't get a win out of. Drew Peterson, or is Drew or David? I always forget. I just always see
David.
Peterson.
David
Peterson. He got shellacked in the first inning today. Shellacked. He didn't look good.
Oh man.
Stroman is. I saw him in the AL East for a long time. I don't think he's anything special. And Taijuan Walker has had his ups and downs in his career. So I mean, you know, it's just not really. anything in that rotation that would give me like, oh yeah, I have confidence in this rotation to win multiple games in a row based off of my pitching rotation. And that includes DeGrom, because you know that they're probably not going to win those games.
Yeah, we know the numbers. I will say Stroman looks good right now. And if I'm not mistaken, he's on a contract year.
Yeah,
I believe so.
I trust a guy like Marcus Stroman, who thinks incredibly highly of himself, obviously. Like he, you know, everybody knows who he is, even though he doesn't, like his history and his statistics don't call for everyone to think of him as this high level pitcher, because he's not a wonderfully, you know, statistically great guy right now. Like, he just hasn't been, but he's a good pitcher. Right now, I will say he looks good, and I have faith in him in a contract year to put together one of those seasons where it's like, yeah, Marcus Stroman was elite, and then he gets paid, and it's like, nah, he was pretty like decent the whole time. You know, so
yeah, and I brought it up on the preview podcast. He doesn't have a qualifying order attached to him, so he's like an unrestricted free agent coming the year. So like he'll have the full potential of teams to be able to go out and sign him. So I think he's trying to set himself up to get that bag.
Absolutely.
I think Stroman, one of the best parts of his game is that attitude and the fire that he brings, because you need that sometimes. Like, baseball is a very slow moving game viewed by most people. And, you know, when he's on the mound and he makes a good play, or his defense makes a good play behind him, he's getting fired up. And sometimes momentum is huge in sports. And sometimes you need that guy, especially the guy on the mound, to let his guys know behind him that he appreciates them making that play, or, you know, to get pumped up and slap gloves on the way to the dugout and, you know, bring that fire. And I think that's part of what the Mets wanted to do going into the season. I mean, this is a little off tangent here, but I don't know if you guys saw that before the season started, while they were down in St. Lucie, they had a practice and they actually pretended to be celebrating the 27th out of game 7 of the World Series, which is like, you know what I mean? Some people might view that as a little cocky, but, you know, I think it's important to be confident. And like, so, you know, you want to bring a winning culture. You want to practice winning and you want to be about winning. And I think Stroman is all about winning. And I think that he fits well in New York. So I think he looked good in his first game and I hope it continues.
Yeah. Yeah. I know some people thought it's like childish, like, oh, what is this, little league? You're going to do a celebration. I'm like, yo, you know, people do that at every level. It's a way to have fun, way to have energy, like you said. So I'm with you. I think the energy is right, too. If you think about what Lindor said when he did come to the contract agreement, he's like, the clubhouse is why I agreed for this. He's like, he clearly thinks that they have something going in the right direction that's not just $341 million. It's something with the energy. It's something with how this team kind of comes together. And they showed it at points last year where the energy was so high. And that brings me to the energy connoisseur of the New York Mets, and he may also be the best hitter on the New York Mets, Dominic Smith. Mets fans will be irate every single time this man's not in the lineup. Andrew, I'm going to you first, quickly. Is he a everyday, like 150 games a year guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, is
absolutely.
It any question? Should he be out of any lineup when there's a lefty, for example?
No, I mean, again, you're going to take him out late in the game for defensive purposes, but again, he should be, if the NL had a DH, he'd be in there every day, and his bat absolutely puts him in that lineup every single day, and you have to, you know, hold your nose for the defense in left field. But again, there's too much potential with that bat for him to not be in that lineup every single day. And he proved it the first game he was in there. He was just like, really, you're going to bench me on opening day after everything I did in 2020. So like, I'd be really disheartened if I was a Mets fan to not see Dom Smith starting left field every single day.
I feel like Uncle Steve is the type of owner that he's seeing those tweets and he's like, all right, Luis, make sure Dom's in the lineup. I don't care what the analytics are saying. I don't care what the GM's telling you. I'm Uncle Steve. Put him in the lineup.
Question. When I watch the Mets games, I kind of leave with the volume off because I'm usually watching something else. But Dom Smith looks like he trimmed down, didn't he?
Yeah, he's slender now.
Yeah, he looks thin out there. Yeah, he's going to be – I mean, you hope he doesn't lose any pop in his bat, but it doesn't seem like he has. But, I mean, that's going to help him in left. So, I mean, you got to think that his defense improves because of that.
I agree. And, he wasn't, like, trash. He's not trash out there anymore. He was trash in the beginning when they first stuck him in the outfield. He's not terrible anymore. And, you know, when you're batting 320 like he did last year, hitting home runs and hitting doubles, you can make a mistake every once in a while in the regular season. I know, you know, when it comes down to it in the eighth, ninth inning, maybe he will have to get subbed out, and that is what it is. That guy has to be in the lineup. It's pretty simple. I think that's good on the Mets. Any last word on the Mets? And then I just want to hop around. You know, maybe everyone calls out one or two interesting things from around the MLB. But any last words on the Mets?
I got one thing that I just thought of. I saw Lucchesi pitch today in relief, and I liked what I saw. I think he has an interesting windup. I know he came over from San Diego in the offseason as a starter because there's literally no room for him in the rotation. But he's supposed to be their fifth starter, I believe, once they transfer. Right now they went with four starters this week because they have an off day on Friday. But once they get that fifth starter, I believe it's going to be him, and I'm interested and excited to see what he's going to bring.
Absolutely. I'm in on that. I think Lucchesi is a guy that you called out, Andrew, too, before the season.
Yep.
To keep an eye on there.
Again, with the way the off days were, and especially since the first season for the Mets got canceled because of COVID, he's going to start the season in the bullpen, but I fully expect him to be that, you know, reliable number five starter that eat out innings and give them, you know, a chance to win every time he goes out there.
Absolutely. Great stuff on the Yankees and Mets there. Let's finish up with just a quick around the league. Just give me one storyline, one team, one player that you kind of have an eye on. It could be someone from your fantasy team, because let's be honest, when we're talking baseball, it's a lot of local, you know, you care about your local team. You care about your Mets or your Yankees or your Phillies or whatever team you care about. And then you play fantasy. So you watch the other guys here and there. You see some national televised games. What are some of the things, or who are some of the guys regular fans need to keep an eye out for? Alec, I'll go to you first.
Well, as a team, as a whole,
whatever you want,
out on the Padres, not because of, oh, it's the Padres, you know, they're going to be so good this year. They are getting injured. And it's not just Tatis, which we don't know what's going to happen with Tatis. But I mean, Dinelson Lamet, he had the Tanaka situation, right, where his like UCL is hanging on by a thread. He's going to be injured his entire career. He's a great pitcher when he's healthy, but he's going to be injured his entire career. Trent Grisham, the young guy, their outfielder, he is hurt. It's a soft tissue injury, if I'm not mistaken. So that could be lingering the entire year. Obviously, Tatis, you got to talk about Tatis. They're not obliged by MLB rules to tell you exactly what's going on with the injury. There's no way this guy's that it's just shoulder inflammation, which is what they listed it as. From what I read, this is something that once you have it, it will continue to dislocate until you get the surgery, which sounds incredibly uncomfortable to be as a person to just every swing, it might just dislocate on you. So you have to get the surgery for this, for him. It's not like, oh, let's wait and see. Let's rest him for 10 days. Maybe the inflammation will go down. If it's as serious as it sounds, from, you know, like all the Twitter doctors and everything like that, you know, that's a really big issue. Plus they have Clevinger out for the entire season, from the Tommy John and whatnot. So that's anybody's overs on the Padres should be worried right now if they're a betting.
Yeah. And it's a good call out because that was the team everybody would have said, who's the non-local team that you care about this year? Everybody would have said the Padres, Tatis, Machado. We know all the moves that they made. We know they're trying to now really combat the Los Angeles Dodgers and be at that top tier of the National League where they're expected to make the playoffs, expected to be in it. And now Tatis, it says 4 to 6 months, I believe, is what I heard last. That's brutal for the game of baseball. It's more brutal for the Padres, obviously. So that's tough. They could end up having a punt year if things go poorly in the first couple months. We always say, you can't win a season, you can't win a World Series in April, but you can lose one. And if they get off to a really slow start, they can be having a really big hill to climb. That can be ugly for the Padres, despite their rebrand. And those new jerseys are just so wonderful. They really did a good job over there in San Diego. Hopefully they can get healthy, do the right thing. Andrew, anything?
Cincinnati Reds came out, you know, they scored 0 runs in the postseason last year. They're right now, they have a +31 run differentials. They're 5-1. Their offense is clicking. You know, Nick Castellanos is doing great. Eugenio Suarez moving from third base to shortstop because they just didn't have a shortstop. They were just like, I guess we'll just move our third baseman over and put Moustakas at third base. They've been a real big surprise there. And again, a really weak National League Central. So, and especially with the pitching injuries and the departures, and they really kind of stepped back and they came out really hot. I mean, can anybody name a starter in their starting rotation currently outside of Luis Castillo?
Anybody?
Sonny Gray?
No, he's hurt.
Ah, damn. Oh, thought I had that, Alec.
Castillo was my answer.
Yeah, Sonny Gray's hurt and Castillo. Nobody. So you have Tyler.
Well, give my credit. Molly. Don't move the goalpost. You ask, name somebody. You name somebody for you.
Jeff Hoffman, Jose De Leon, and Wade Miley are their four through five.
Wade Miley's the only name I recognize on that list.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Jose De Leon was the Rocky starter for forever.
Yep.
The ever exciting Rockies. Actually, they were exciting for a couple years in a row. Now they're a trash organization.
My question to you, Drew, is do you think that is a sustainable team, or do you, and like, okay, like even like you expect some kind of dip because they're leading the league in home runs right now, and that's not going to be the thing. But this to me, and like everyone's making a big deal, and I'm not saying you're wrong or anything for bringing it up, but it just seems like the prototypical hot start 3 weeks into the season, they'll go on a 15 game losing streak or something like that.
Well, if it wasn't the National League Central, I think I might incline to agree with you there. But again, it's such a trash division that, like, again, that nobody really did anything outside of, like, the Cubs didn't really do anything. Milwaukee didn't do anything. Pittsburgh's the worst organization in baseball outside of Colorado. And, you know, the St. Louis added Arenado, but like that was it. That was the big move. So like, it wouldn't surprise me at all that if Cincinnati made the playoffs this year. But, I mean, they'll definitely be in the conversation. And it's mostly because the division's trash.
Also, we don't know if extended playoffs are going to be a thing. It might just be a thing midway through the season.
Might pop up. I'm hoping for a Rob Manfred lightning strike. Remember when there's lightning behind him on the TV? Yeah. Like, and then he was like, there's going to be guy on second, 10th inning. I'm like, what? The season started already, dude. What the hell are you talking about? Anyways, Mike, any last words for you, Mike?
So Andrew actually took my team to keep an eye on, because I was going to say the Cincinnati Reds been averaging like 9 runs a game so far early on in the season. But I'll go to 2 individual performances over the first week of baseball. Badu on the Detroit Tigers, kind of movie, couldn't write it any better kind of story. First pitch he sees in the majors, he goes yard. It's a homer. But on top of that, he's been hitting really well. I believe he had a game-winning hit maybe 2 days ago.
Monday, yep.
Yeah. So he's been impressive, and Detroit really hasn't been on anybody's radar to be a good team. I mean, I can't believe Miggy is still playing. That's unreal.
He still has 4 years left on his contract, by the way, after this year.
That's absurd. Absurd. I saw the home run he hit on opening day in the Blizzard. That was pretty cool to see that. But yeah, I think Badu's been impressing early on, and we'll see if Detroit can put something together. But my other, and this was just an individual one-game performance, Shohei Ohtani, pitching, throwing 100 in the top of the first inning, and then coming to bat second in the lineup in the bottom of the first inning and going yard on the first pitch he sees, the definition of pitchers who rake. And I think that is such a rare thing. I mean, we literally, the Major League Baseball, the pitcher bats for half the teams, and then there's a designated hitter for the other half of the teams. And in the league where there's a designated hitter, this pitcher who's throwing 100 is coming up to bat and hitting the ball 450, 500 feet on any given night. And I just think that talent is underappreciated, especially on the Angels where you have Mike Trout. I still think he gets overshadowed sometimes. And I just think that's something as a fan of baseball for my entire life and playing the game growing up is something that I was watching live and was jaw dropped because that was just unbelievable.
Listen to the crack of the bat here from his at bat.
Oh,
That's the same guy.
There's nobody in this team.
Oh my god! I love you for that, Alec. That you like, you're staked in the ground. You're like, all right, Shohei, get him out of here. Mike Trout, don't care. Talk to me when he wins a playoff game. I respect it. I respect where you land there. I really do.
Well, Shohei Ohtani is a different story. It's because he spurned the Yankees very badly, and for that I will always hate him. Hey, you know, it's great that he's doing this right now. Next week when he tears his UCL again, we'll have this conversation.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm putting that bad juju, Bobby.
No bad juju.
I'm not wishing for it, but history would point that would happen again.
Baseball is a game of statistics, and statistically speaking, it's hard to keep up the pace that he's on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's tough.
Well, yeah, first time in 108 years that the pitcher batted as high as he did second in the lineup. And it was like the first home run that an AL pitcher hit off another AL pitcher since 74, which was the last year of the non-DH.
Wow. That's a good
from my perspective, statistics. It's a bad strategy. You're gonna get rid of the DH for the rest of the game because you want to put Ohtani in. Ohtani's going to have 4 or 5 innings.
I actually thought about that during the game, Al. I thought about that. I'm not even kidding. I thought that they should actually just bat Shohei first. So when they do sub him out, it's kind of like the 9-hole.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought there.
Makes sense. So what he's doing is putting an undue burden onto his team by hitting.
All right, I'm moving on. I got two things. I got two
Maybe
things.
Maybe they can sub him out for Mike Trout so they can have somebody who can actually hit.
Oh, my God. Can I mute you? Do I have a mute button on the Zoom over here? I probably do.
I'll see myself out.
It's around the horn. He gets
Get
the
your
mute
hands
for 15
off
seconds.
Anyways, I'm moving on. I'm moving on from that topic. I have one thing that's small, and it's small sample size, but we talked about him in the preview. Randy Arozarena. Not a lot of confidence out of Andrew and Alec, the designated hitters themselves, in him to put together another good season. Small sample size again, just like the playoffs last year, but he has 5 hits and 16 at-bats. You know, he's a guy who looks like he's ready to hit the ball day in, day out. He might be a guy that was not just a one playoff wonder. So we'll see. We'll monitor. I'm not saying anything crazy. I'm just wanting
he's
to put
five
it out there.
Hits. He's got 16 at-bats. He's got 5 hits.
I'm just saying. If you guys thought he was a complete, you know, one-hit wonder, it might not be the case. That's all I'm saying.
When people figure him out, which will happen, they will pitch. They will be able to pitch to him.
This will be a fun thing to monitor. Because I am now going to follow him every day.
He also faced who in the opening series?
The Red Sox?
Yeah, and how's their rotation this year?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
All right, so my point wasn't great, but that's okay. I just wanted to put it out there so we can monitor it moving forward. But my one that I actually do want to talk about, it's a player who I saw a highlight of. I did watch a Twins game this year. I almost lied there. I did watch one Twins game this year when they played an afternoon game I caught during when I was working. Byron Buxton is a guy who hasn't particularly put it together in his career. He was number 2 pick behind Carlos Correa. And, you know, he's had some moments. He's obviously an incredible, incredible athlete. He plays a 6 center field, all this stuff. His numbers have never added up. Last year in 40 games, his on-base percentage was only 13 points higher than his batting average. That's not very good at all. He was only walked twice in 135 plate appearances. It's not very good. But he has 3 home runs already this year. One of those home runs in which I saw was an absolute bomb. And he looks like a stronger man out there on the field right now. He's always been a stud athlete. He's been expected to be awesome for a long time. There's a chance that he has a breakout type season. Everybody likes to say, oh, he'll never be anything too special because he hasn't showed it in his first couple years. He was 21 in the major leagues. That doesn't happen very often. He was 21 years old. Not everybody's Juan Soto. Being one of the best players on a championship team when they could hardly buy a drink yet. So I think this is an opportunity for a guy on a good team that hits well, Byron Buxton, to have this coming out party year, age of 27, kind of entering his prime. Keep an eye out for Byron Buxton.
Classic case of post-prospect type.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, realistically, how many guys come in at 21 and succeed? Handfuls of guys. So it's not a lot. And that'll be cool because he really is a spectacular athlete. Spectacular. So we'll keep an eye. But I think that's all we got. Subway Sports Talk. Great one for the boys here. Alec Argento, Andrew Kalania, Mike Bonfield. Mike, your first time on Subway Sports Talk. How'd it feel?
Awesome. I actually genuinely enjoyed this so much. Just I love just talking sports, New York, whether it's New York sports, around the league, whatever it is, man. I can't wait for the next episode we do.
Absolutely. And you'll be back for a bunch of those episodes, I'm sure. And it'll be great fun. We have a lot of fun doing this. That's the point. That's why we do it, right? You know, we do it to have a good time, to try to build a little following, get some people to listen, to interact. And, you know, I'm doing it to hone the skills of hosting a show and podcast and whatnot. But when it comes down to it, if we're not having fun doing it, there's no point at all. Except when we're...
I'm doing it to get paid.
Yeah, that's true. Somehow Alex contract, he's the only one getting paid here. It's really impressive.
I'll talk to you about that later.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
you're just here not to lose money while Alex over there just raking in cash. It's unbelievable. And his dog is super cute in the Zoom picture right now. What's up, Cheddar?
He's being a good boy.
That's right.
Hey, Cheddar.
But that's all we got for today. Subway Sports Talk for Pete, for Alec, for Andrew, for Mike. That's it. Stay tuned for more next week. Basketball, baseball. I just got to keep reminding people because it's sneaking up on me. The NFL draft is within the month. It's very, very close.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Very.
A lot of offseason moves there, too. Like, interesting.
Yeah. And I talked about Sam Darnold by myself on the last episode, but that happened. The Jets are getting Wilson by all accounts. It's going to be exciting come draft time, and that time is very, very near. But for now, we say goodbye. Subway Sports Talk. Have a good one.
See you guys.
Bye.